Welcome back to Always Evolving. And before we get started with the amazing Dr. Drew, I wanted to let you know you can text me. And if you text me at this phone number, 310-984-1858, I'll sing it to you. 310-984-1858. Text me, say podcast, empowerment tips. And what I'm going to be doing is sending you some videos that are inspiring. I'm not trying to upsell you. And overall, it's a way for me to connect with you. And I do respond to text messages. So hopefully I hear from you. That's 310-984-1858. Just shoot me a text. Now let's get started with the icon, Dr. Drew.
Pleasure to be here.
You kind of gave me a look when I said the word icon. You don't think you are?
I just think old when you say that. it's been too long. I know you don't really mean it. You just haven't even been around a long time.
I mean that everyone knows who you are. Unless you've been living under a rock, you know who Dr. Drew is.
Which seems weird to me. Seems positively weird.
And you help bring, you know, kind of mental health and addiction mainstream. And, you know, it's a big achievement.
That was the goal. You know, there's a whole story, if you want me to tell it, about the process of bringing it, some of it, to television. I mean, obviously, Loveline was my first little encounter with, public health messaging. And it was actually what really compelled me to stay on the radio in 1984 was one Anthony Fauci, who was coaching young physicians to get out there and educate about HIV and AIDS. We didn't even have the term HIV yet. We just were starting to call it AIDS. And that was my sort of first, I knew not what I was doing, but I came to understand that a little bit of humor, a narrative, a relatable source, these are the ways you deliver health messages. And so when they came to me to do Teen Mom, I knew that would work. I knew that would absolutely affect young people's choice making. And it did. Now, there are two academic studies that show the higher the viewership, the lower the teen pregnancy. So that's good. And then Celebrity Rehab, which was something that I had decided couldn't be done, but I would have loved to have brought it to the public. And one day, Bob Forrest, you know, the guy with the glasses and the hat, mm-hmm. came in my office and he was like, "You know, I'm so sick of it." We were treating a lot of celebrities, but, you know, not exclusively so by any means. But we were seeing our patients in the media being portrayed as on some sort of vacation or making excuses for their behavior. And we were like, they're sick. They're working so hard in their recovery. We need to do a TV show. He says to me, walks in, he sits down in a chair across from me. He goes, "We need to do a TV show where we show how hard they work, how difficult this is, how painful it is, how sick people can get." And I said, "Bob, funny thing, somebody had approached me and I've been in kind of hiding about it. I just don't know. I wasn't clear it was the right thing to do." And he goes, "No, we got to do it." And so that's when I decided to move forward with it.
Well, but let me rewind a little bit, because there are a lot of doctors who want to make it in television and media and entertainment. Why do you think you were so successful?
I have no idea. It started, you got to go back to the beginning, I guess. So I always had an affinity for being in front of people. I like public speaking. I used to like performing when I was a kid. So I like that. So I like it. So I'm drawn to that. I also get very bored doing the same thing over and over again every day. So I need creativity. I need to be able to do things different. I can't go in the same office every day and be happy. So when something unusual presents itself to me, I will usually explore it. Mm. No blueprints. I've never had a blueprint. I don't know what I'm doing. I still don't know what I'm doing. But I was thinking recently that particularly when I was younger, I just said yes to everything. If somebody said, "You want to try this?" I go, "Let's check it out. Let's go see and see if I can turn it into something that I can feel good about or that's worthwhile." But I never stood back and went, "Ho, wait a minute here. You're affecting my brand or that's not my plan," or anything like that. Mm. Ever. It was always, we've been doing radio for 10 years and a couple of television producers showed up and I was like, how do you do a TV show? I don't know. Should we do that? I'll follow you guys. Let's see what happens. That was MTV. And the same thing with Celebrity Rehab. Some guys showed up and said, "We want to do this thing." I went, "It's a great idea. It'll never happen, but let me try to work on it with you." So it's always been doors opening and kind of going in and exploring them. Beyond that, I have had a extraordinary clinical experience that almost no physicians are getting anymore, where I worked both in a psychiatric hospital, in an intensive care unit, a medical hospital, in a medical hospital, outpatient medical, outpatient psychiatry, inpatient chemical dependency. It's almost like four or five careers that were going simultaneously clinically. So I literally got the opportunity to see everything. And not only everything, but we, particularly on the addiction side, developed a reputation for being able to handle the most sick patients, the most polydiagnosed medical psychiatric addiction cases. We got them and we did a good job with them. So I saw extraordinary cases at the same time. And I noticed, you know, what really came home to me was I signed up to be on Governor Cuomo's rapid response team for physicians to go into the ICU and treat COVID patients. And they, because I was ready to go, they just never called me, but they did do a comprehensive interview in preparation for it. And this is the part that caught my attention. And they were like, do you know how to do this? I mean, yeah, I know that. Yeah, yep. Oh, yeah, done lots of that. Right? And they're like, really? You're an internist? You're not a pulmonologist? You're an internist and you've done all that? I was like, yeah, I did lots of it. That was back in the day. You could do that. And that's what really kind of drove home for me that I've had this kind of crazy clinical experience. And it causes me to see things in a very clear and certain way, very opinionated because of it. But I do see things very clearly. And I feel like I have an obligation to download that and share that. So that's another piece.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that, you know, my background was I was a chemical dependency counselor and I've owned a treatment center for the past 14 years in West Hollywood. And I come from like kind of the clinical background. Now I'm in the coaching world where it's the Wild West. None of these people are trying to work with people who are depressed or have, you know, major anxiety disorders. And it's very odd to me because in the coaching space, you can do whatever you want. And I see it going on. But then suddenly, if you've had all this training and you're a licensed clinician, you have a lot of regulations. As long in the coaching space, you just need to not say you're doing therapy.
I've always said this about chiropractors because I would see these disasters that a chiropractor was taking care of. And you'd go, oh, my God, if a doctor had done this, they'd be sued in a second. But because it's outside of their field of knowledge, which is general medicine, they're free and clear. They can't expect them to know general medicine. They aren't trained in it. But the public doesn't understand this. So, yeah, I get what you're feeling. And so I think there's an important sort of educational point here to make, which is that if you're going to hire a coach, which I am not against coaching, I understand the discipline of coaching, make sure that that person's had a broad clinical experience, particularly in the area that you want the coaching.
And
does that sound about right?
Yeah, and has supervision.
Supervision, letters after their name are helpful.
Right.
You know, understand what those letters mean. You know.
A trend right now is just because they can tap on your forehead doesn't mean that they're going to suddenly release like your past childhood trauma. And everyone's into this EFT. And look, I'm all about a lot of different things.
Oh, is EFT in now?
Oh,
it's
yeah,
so it's funny. It's so great to hear you say it because I've been an EFT advocate for a decade. I really have. I was a patient in what my therapist had such good boundaries. She wouldn't tell me what she was doing, but my construct of what was happening was emotionally focused therapy. And I loved it. I thought it was very
helpful. Dr. Drew, my forehead has been tapped so many times. I probably have an indent right here from all the issues of my past.
but the point is very good. I mean, for instance, one of the, you know, when coaching started coming on, one of the areas where I encountered a coach was with Jeff Conway, who was the most sick opiate, polydiagnosed medical, catastrophe with a horrible prognosis with doctors enabling him, physicians enabling his opiate use, which is why he died. And a coach shows up and is going to fix him. I'm like, oh, dude, you don't get what you're dealing with here. This is profound medical stuff and dangerous conditions.
This is Jess Betancourt, the host of DNA ID, the only true crime podcast that exclusively covers cases solved using forensic genealogy. DNA ID goes behind the headlines to answer your questions about this remarkable new crime-solving tool, how it works, how cases are selected, why the cases were unsolved for so long, and how the justice system is addressing it. I include input from law enforcement to give you the inside scoop that we all crave with a straightforward, no-nonsense delivery. You can find DNA ID on any podcast platform. Episodes come out weekly on Mondays.
What has been the hardest challenge for you being a professional and in media? Because it's interesting. I find that on one hand, everyone goes, mental health should be mainstream. And then on another hand, they're like, you shouldn't be a professional on television and talk about it. And I'm like,
that's right.
What the hell are you guys talking about?
I'm so glad you adopt that point of view, because here's my point of view. I'm a physician. When I get on TV and talk about the heart or the pancreas, it should be no different when I speak about the brain.
Right.
Now, if there are things that a person doesn't want me to disclose about their heart, pancreas, or brain, of course. But if you hold up a rash on a camera, I can tell you what that rash is. And if somebody's engaged in manic psychosis, I can assess kind of what that is. And I can talk about these things. It's important to talk about them. And it's important to talk about them all in the same way. If you say those things shouldn't be on TV, you are stigmatizing those things. That really makes me angry. So it's funny. I was on a stream. It's Healing Minds NOLA. It was a New Orleans thing. And I was on with a psychiatrist, and he was talking about, I go, the way you guys deal with the medical record is wrong. The psychiatric medical record is protected. Shouldn't be any different. It should be HIPAA, same as all the other medical records. Psychiatric care is, you go into a waiting room and you push a button. Should be the same waiting room as any other kind of medical provider. That's it. Don't make it different. As soon as you make it special and different, you're creating stigma.
So have you, what has been the challenge for you in this roller coaster of entertainment where so many, patient care, you show up, you got the patient, it may be complex, but you're not dealing with pressures or people trying to get you to say something or something.
Yeah, the get you to say stuff. You've been on TV before, I guess.
I have, yeah.
So, I was naive to that at the beginning and had to get very tough about that. But it's a strange dance.
What do you mean naive?
So I answered this saying, okay, I know what people need to hear, but I don't know how to reach them. These people that create television and radio, they know how to do that. So I will ride with them and keep delivering. We called it back in the day, the Gainsburger and the pill philosophy, which is if you want to get a dog to take a pill, you can't hand it the pill, but wrap it in turkey or Gainsburger, they take the pill. I'm the pill. And by myself, it doesn't deliver much. It just doesn't. But in a right environment, I can kind of slip in information, or I can focus narratives and make sense of them for people. So that's my job. But as you get further and further into it, people will adulterate all kinds of things. I think the biggest example of that was in Celebrity Rehab, where day one, I found producers talking to patients in ways that I blew my mind. I was like, these are sick people in treatment. You can't do that. You understand? This is somebody who's going to decompensate if you do that. Huh? What? I'm just doing my job, which is creating shitstorms. That's their job. And I finally had to put my foot down and say, and I had excellent producers. This is not to be critical of them. They were used to doing reality. I just said, look, in treatment for chemical dependency, shit goes down. You don't have to worry about it. Don't do anything more. But I don't want to see anybody talking to my patients ever again, period, full stop.
Got it. And you've said sick a few times. So what's your measure of someone going from sick to well, right?
It's a great question. We threw the word sick around quite a bit, and we threw the word crazy around a lot too, because we didn't mean it in a pejorative sense. We mean it in sort of making it casual, making it okay, making it almost, lighthearted. And I could see where people could be put off by that. So I have tried not to be that way. For me, the fundamental issue is discomfort, right? Misery and functioning, right? Those are the two indices that tell us that somebody needs care. You may come to care because you're not happy and you want to do better, but you're still functioning fine. That's not technically a diagnostic situation until the functioning problem kicks in. Now, my assessment may be the functioning may be coming soon, so we got to get in there, which is a nice thing to get in early. But yeah, it's misery meets this inability to function or impaired functioning. And functioning, you know, it's the same thing as we say in addiction medicine, right? It's relationships, worker school, financial situation, legal status, health. If one of those areas of your life is getting impaired, that's an issue.
I got you. So you're trying to use the word sick less often, but it comes out from the old days, I guess.
It comes out from the old days.
Yeah, at our treatment center, I'm always like, oh my God. Because sometimes I feel like therapists will say the word sick as a way of also saying they haven't done everything they could with calling referral sources. Like in my world, right? Where I'm like...
That sounds interesting. I get that. Like we need a doctor in here right away.
Right.
And I get that. And to be fair, you know, one of the... You know, and I know how we talk about patients behind the scenes, and, right. And if people really stepped into those meetings, we're blowing off steam a lot. There's yeah. a lot of humor. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that goes on, and it should not leak out in any way because right. we got to survive what we're dealing with too. Right.
For sure. So being as successful as you are, which I say you're very successful, what kind of people do you surround yourself with?
I don't think about that very often. I mean, I have. Most of my relationships are so stable and have been in place for so long. I was thinking about that a couple of days ago. I was thinking about how I'm not somebody that could have moved multiple times. I've been in the same house for 20 years. I've been married for 20, you know, how many years to now? We're coming in on 30 or something, or we're 91. Yeah. And I surround myself with family. I surround myself, you know, Carola and I still see each other to talk on a daily basis. Dr. Bruce and I talk on a regular basis. And so this sort of people I've always known, there is a piece in here that you should be aware of that I have had my whole career not to worry about and very grateful for, which was having had a manager. So let me just tell you that story really quick, which is that Kennedy from MTV, right? Kennedy is now on Fox News, or Fox Business. She used to be the show that followed Loveline. She was on K-Rock forever and ever. And I've known Kennedy for literally forever. And she had a manager. And his manager, one night she was our guest on the show, and her manager showed up. He sort of approached me afterwards. He goes, hey, what are you doing? What do you want to do? I'm like, whoa. I don't want to do anything. I want to be left alone to practice medicine. Just who are you? What do you want? What's going on here? And he kind of kept kind of sending me messages and offering help. And he goes, let me just see what I can do. And I go, I don't even know what that means, but on a handshake, okay, let's see. And that's kind of how the TV show happened. And he really orchestrated everything because I kept saying, just leave me alone to practice medicine. Just make sure it does not interfere with that. And I did that for 25 years. And he is really sort of the architect behind everything. You know, I would go in the doors that he would open. And the latest one was, I did a talk show, an AM talk show for 6 years. And when he had me sit down with the program manager for that, I thought he'd lost his mind. I was like, what? Why would I, an AM talk? It does not feel like me. I had a great experience. It was really fun. It was really interesting. And he was right. So but he died recently. And so I miss him greatly.
So you have no manager right now?
I do have a manager, someone who worked for his company, who's known me forever as well. She kind of stepped into that role.
Got it. So and Adam came on the podcast a few weeks ago. He's awesome. I actually have a lot of similar beliefs about California and everything that's going down. So I could see
bad.
Why it's so bad. It's literally, you know, here in West Hollywood, I mean, you have, which has been an LGBT community, you have Rage closed after 40 years. You have five nightclubs.
I didn't know that. Iconic monument. I mean, that should have been a big deal.
It would be like you passing away.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
Yeah, so
it's a bigger deal. Trust me, not many as many people would miss it.
But the thing is, everything's kind of shutting down, and we're seeing a huge uptick in terms of people with suicidal ideation. We used to be about 70% chemical dependency. We've swung to about 80% mental health now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
What advice would you give people right now during the pandemic?
Well, I'm not so sure I'm a great, well, look, if I sidestep this, I guess we're in big trouble. I've been saying all along, here's why I'm ambivalent. I've been saying all along, take care of yourself, sleep right, nutrition, sunlight, exercise, get outdoors, get the people you love around you and keep great contact under it. All the good, healthy things that, frankly, are all about what recovery is about, frankly. So it's practice what mutual aid societies tell us to practice. But it has become, just the last couple of days, I've been thinking, it has become so grinding and so long. I don't think that's enough anymore. I told somebody this morning, I feel like at some point we're just going to go, F it. Let's go back to work and see what happens.
So, you know, like about 2 years ago, I met Dr. Phil, and I've been on about 40 episodes of Dr. Phil in the last 2 years. And I came out with a book and it did really well. And so I found myself doing a lot of television. And that's what's keeping me in
that's
LA.
That's where you learned about get you to say stuff. That's where you encountered segment producers. Well done.
Yeah. And that's why I'm asking, because you've been around a long time and there aren't a lot of people who end up riding the waves of and being look, in your career, you've done Loveline, Celebrity Rehab, you're a leading expert that people call on. And you have not been canceled. So
I've had multiple canceling procedures. I've been canceled multiple times.
Yeah, but when I think of a cancellation, I feel like it just never like comes back.
Well, there's nothing. Here's the good news. I'm uptight, and my moral, you know, my moral corridor is quite narrow. So there's not an outlying behavior. There's no Me Too. There's nothing like that. But people try to cancel me all the time because they don't like things I say. And so what I have learned is if you don't like what I say, I represent something different to you than who I am. Mm-hmm. And my job then is just to keep pushing out there what I know to be the true, because again, like I'm so clear because of all my clinical experience. I just need to double down on staying out there with the material, and that stuff will contextualize, settle something. So that's sort of always been my approach, just keep moving forward. Because the stories, when I get a canceled story going, it's never the reality. It's always a version that sounds good for cancellation.
Is that hard for you at all?
Oh, it's incredibly painful. And it used to be just, oh. I mean, I remember when Amazon first put book reviews on their website. And when I would read, Adam and I wrote a book in 1997 or something. And when I read those book reviews, I would be furious and upset and I couldn't get over it. And no ability to respond and hopeless and helpless and all those good feelings.
And a lot of those people never even read the book.
So the ones I remember to this day, they were specific things that had read the book. And, okay. I was like, again, you don't understand. You clearly don't understand what I was saying. And so, to think about where I've come from that to now, I am much, the good news on all of the social media and the cancel culture, it's made me more resilient. It's made me more tolerant. It's made me more perseverant. So there's been but it's been very, 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 very painful. I don't want to minimize how awful it's been. It's awful when it happens. It's just unbelievable.
Does your wife feel the pain too? What's your wife's name?
And Susan. She lately, because she's sort of been more involved. I mean, she was so busy raising triplets that my stuff was sort of on my own. Now she's in with me. She's created all this lovely Zoom, you know, the elements and things. And she's in with me all the time and has produces a daily stream I do. You can see it at 3 o'clock Pacific. She's just real involved right now. She got a career at it. And I love that she likes doing it. So now when there's an attack, oh man, does she feel it? I mean, she loses it. And you know, she's going to have to go through the crucible and get used to it too.
But I got to imagine it feels good because you're not alone in it and you have someone to talk to about it.
Well, yes and no. Yes, you're right. It's better not to be alone, but no, because I'm sort of further along in my ability to tolerate it. And so now I have to kind of manage her. She gets really upset. And I remember being like that. And so we got to bring her along a little bit to get some faith that there's another side to this, that you can get through these things.
And when this first went on, right, with Amazon reviews or whatever,
Yeah.
So psychologically, because you had to have analyzed yourself, why is this really bothering me? Why does it matter? Why, when you say it's painful, do you think it feels painful?
Well, a couple things. One is my entire identity has been so tied up in being not just a physician, but the best physician, the best possible. Yeah. So when I'm accused of not being the best, I attack myself. I immediately go to, is that true? What have I done? With a full inventory on myself. And then if I find the criticism is unfounded, then I feel wounded and helpless. Right. The helplessness is a terrible feeling. What, you can't do anything. You can't respond. You can't do anything. And it's a feeling you have to learn to tolerate, but keep moving forward with, because you're not truly helpless. You feel helpless now because you want to go throttle that person or at least respond in a way that everyone hears you. None of those things are possible. You just got to keep moving forward.
I'm just on this point. I'm just curious because I've also gone on Amazon and looked at the reviews and I'm like, you know, like people have gone, Dr. Phil's the only reason this book is successful. And, you know, people would just say a whole bunch of things, which, by the way, it's helpful to have a platform for sure.
That's right. It sure is.
But in terms of what someone could say back then that actually, because people can say a lot of things, right? Some people could say things negative and it just doesn't matter. It's like, whatever, this person's just doing their thing. When you say you remember specific examples with like you and Adam, do you remember?
It wasn't what's always the case. The ones that got through to me were unfair, unfounded, and misrepresenting, right? And that's what bothers me. If it's a real criticism and it hits home, I'd be like, thank you. Yeah, you're right. And in fact, I would amplify that and go, you know what? I'm correcting course, but I apologize. You know, I have no problem learning and growing and changing. And that's the nature of clinical practice. And that's what people are learning now. It's why every day our COVID data and our COVID understanding changes, because we're trying to get to the truth. We are never there. And so it feels, you know, it feels unfair and then nothing I can do in response to it. And that again, it's the helplessness that is the most disturbing part of it. If it were something well-founded, I'd take that away and go, all right, okay, I'll learn from that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like there's really no justice in it and everyone moves past it without correcting it.
There's so much shit out there on me that's wrong. It's unbelievable. And I just think you have to learn to accept that. And if somebody cares enough to want the truth, they'll ask about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting too. Like, what do you think is good advice for someone who feels like they're going through something unjust and you have a friend who, like, for example, you, right? So let's say I was friends with you and I saw that and I knew you were hurt. What would be the best thing I could do for you?
The best thing you could do is coach me up in the moment to just as though I were running a marathon or anything else of an athletic nature that's not going to be done today. It's going to be done in the next 3 months and you're going to have to keep it up every day. So I would think in terms of coaching me up to get through the day, keep a positive mental attitude. There's nothing you can say to make it better. Because it isn't fair. It is unjust. You do feel helpless. That's just reality. And maybe even a little bit of reminder, because here's the thing about brain states. When you're in those brain states, you feel like they're never going to end. And the brain state of helplessness is a particularly sort of soupy one. And I think coaching me up that remember, this is going to make you more resilient. I know you feel helpless now. It will pass. Keep doing what you know how to do. And it will, you know, just keep focused on what is true. And I think people would benefit from that.
Suddenly I got excited that you were having this fantasy of moving out of California. So I kind of just went there. Any advice right now for anyone during this pandemic, now that you mentioned a few days ago, you've been thinking about it, anything you would advise someone?
Go back to work. Try to create normalcy, whatever that means. I think we have to, it's almost like a mandate. Like, I don't care what your state is saying. We live in a most oppressive government in the United States, which is California. And I'm certain now, because the data is flat, because they flattened the curve, so to speak, with the daily case rate, they feel quite vindicated in what they're doing. The cost of what they're doing is too great. Find a way to create normalcy, especially for your kids. The lack of normalcy is going to have untold effect on the development of these children. We don't know. create normalcy, mitigate, wear your mask, keep your distancing, do those things, but get at it. Get at it again. We cannot be the, you ever remember the experiments where they induced the helplessness in dogs? We cannot be the helpless dogs, right? So here's the basic paradigm was two chambers, a dog in one chamber with an electrified floor and the other side was not electrified. They'd electrify the floor. The dog would learn to jump to the other side. Eventually they put two electrified floors in and the dog crawls up and runs into a ball and just sits there taking it. Don't take it. Don't take it. We have to get back engaged in life. We have to. I'm not saying recklessly. I'm not saying don't wear your mask. And do not make it a political issue in any way, because it should not be. Our mental health and development of our kids depends upon this.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like it's extremely everything's so politicized. You know, you literally if you have any free thought of any direction, it's suddenly you're this, you're that. And tell me, Dr. Drew, what are you most, because you're always creating, you're a very creative guy and interested in a lot of things. What are you most excited about right now? And it could be your wife, it could be your kids, it could be your work, it could be whatever.
Yeah. My wife and I are enjoying ourselves, and that's very good. And even in this quarantine, we're good.
By the way, and it sounds so cute that you guys tag team with the Zoom and together. I just love that dynamic. Like, yeah. I want a relationship like that.
I wish it on you. I wish it for you because it's been great. And it's
so cute.
Not perfect. It's not, we're not perfect. Neither of us are perfect people. But we've certainly had it work for, 30 years.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we actually got together when I was 24. So we're coming in on 40 years of knowing each other. So it's kind of extraordinary. So that's good. I recommend that for everybody. People always go, what's the magic? The best I can frame it is it's very much like recovery. If you feel today excited and good about it and stay with that, the probability is you're going to feel that way tomorrow. Mm. So whatever it was at the beginning, if that was enough to really feel like something, if I feel like this about this person indefinitely, that I will be fine. Then just take it one day at a time after that. One day at a time. Not that there won't be bad days, there will be. But that passion, attraction, fittedness, whatever that thing is, it's kind of a magical ingredient, the relationship. And we could do a whole pod on that. Refer you all to interpersonal neurobiology, Alan Shore, Peter Fonagy, these guys, amazing information coming in on how that works now. But I would say focus there. But in terms of what I'm excited about, I'm excited about creating new things. And I've not been able to do that lately. I'm excited about public speaking. I didn't realize how much I like public speaking and communicating to large crowds until it was all taken away from me. I had a extensive speaking schedule set up for the summer that has just passed us. And when that went away, it made me depressed.
Yeah, me
I really
too.
Felt
no,
loss.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Listen,
yeah.
I stopped working with a lot of clients because all of a sudden I was doing all these speaking gigs and it pays well. It's fun. They treat you well. It's you're in and out and you can make impact and you can help people.
Exactly.
And then it just went, whoa,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you're excited.
That's what happened to me.
When you say you're not really creating anything right now, what would you like to be creating towards?
I've got a million ideas and they just, it's really kind of all for TV and TV is just sort of not open for business. And I on the medical side, I've got a woman named Nicole Angemi, who's a pathology tech. I've been trying
to develop.
She's
on your podcast,
something.
Isn't she?
She has been. I've been trying to develop something for her forever and I can't push it through and I don't know why. On the mental health side, I'd like to revisit, maybe not celebrity rehab or something like that, to really explore. Maybe you and I could do something.
Yeah.
Where we explore the new way treatment is done now. It's different. It's different than when we do celebrity rehab. There's a lot of different issues in there now that just weren't there back then. And it's different and it's new and the issues are different.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certainly, if we do celebrity, there are plenty of you that could use our help. And
you know what could be interesting too is getting some people who have depressive disorders or aren't necessarily, but listen, I know there's a scale and a spectrum and we got
to
make sure.
Well, no, what I'm sighing about is you have to factor in the television. And that's the hard part. You know, you and I are fascinated by all this. And for us, it would be endlessly interesting, but that's not TV. Somebody has to figure out the TV part of that. And that's the whatever, you know.
Well, there's got to be like, there's got to be the housewife who is hoarding currently. There's got to be like, I'm just saying the range of issues, right? Especially with COVID and mental health. You know, I always viewed mental health as this huge umbrella. We all fit inside of it, just like physical health. And there's all these little pockets all throughout it, right? And I think there's just so many struggles that are really interesting that haven't quite been brought to light yet. You know, but listen,
you're
the mastermind behind Celebrity Rehab and all of that. So, I mean, yeah, you want me to do something with you, call me up. I'm down.
All right. Well, let's think about it. We'll think about, you know, I mean, the things that are, it'd be a really interesting exploration. The things that people are deeply enraptured by now are issues of race and gender. Mm. And maybe we could fold in something about mental health and race and gender. And now we got kind of an interesting mix and we kind of figure out what that is. I don't know. I'm not sure yet, but those are topics that I feel like would be ways of getting into this that would be compelling for people.
What was your greatest success or what gets you the most excited when you think back to Celebrity Rehab? Is there any story where you're like, this has made it all worth it?
Well, two things. One is the individual stories, people like Jenny Ketchum, who was Penny Flame, porn star, drug addict, sex addict, who's now a medical social worker, married with kids, and consummate professional. That you see that those kinds of transformations are why I got into the field of addiction. I saw that happen and I was like, what is that? How does that happen? I want to be a part of it. And that was 1983. And so I've since then sort of learned how to be a part of it. Jenny's a great example of it. The other thing, which was an unknown in terms of the production, which was when we got involved with season one, I thought, all right, here we go. I am scared that this is going to hurt these people. It's going to impact them adversely. So every day at group, particularly, I'd be like, you guys okay? Are the cameras bothering you? You feel good about what's happening? They'd always go, yeah. And they got kind of frustrated with me saying that because every day I was so anxious that what we were doing was somehow not okay because we'd never been done before. And finally, Mary Carey, who was a porn star, looks at me and she goes, Drew, I've done just about everything on camera. I understand what this is to do this in front of a camera. And I thought, oh, right. These guys know cameras. They know being public with things and they've made a choice to do this. Now, here's the piece that's sort of the comedy side. The gratitude side is pretty much every person that came in to screw with us, get paid, get on TV, maybe get a little treatment. That's it. They came in to mess things up. And one virtually 100% of them, I can think of two cases now where it wasn't quite where I wanted it to be, but essentially 100% of the kids, say 98% of the cases, they all went from resistant and sort of antisocial to, oh my goodness, you guys are quite serious about this. Oh my goodness, I'm benefiting from this. Oh my goodness, I want to share this with people and be an example for other people so they can get access to things like this. That was a gotcha. That was a miracle to me. And it when every group went through the same transformation. So I learned early, I didn't know this. I didn't know at first if we would see it every group, but when I saw it in the second group, I thought, oh, this is probably going to happen all the way and happen with every group.
And why did it stop? Why did Celebrity Rehab stop?
I don't know. I wasn't engaged with the television. There's a whole new executive team in there right now. And oftentimes what happens when the television executive staff turns over, it's like that was their thing. And now we're going to do our thing. We can't do the same thing. But there was another piece, I think, as I look back, which is everyone was saying, you know, why do they have to be celebrities? Why can't you treat regular people? I said, that's what I do. I'll happily treat regular people. So our last season was simply called Rehab. And it was a very challenging group. I'll use the word sick again. They really had a lot of stuff going on and they did rather well. A lot of them are doing extremely well right now. But we did it and it was a great season and nobody watched. And that was sort of it. That was sort of the end of it because I don't think they wanted to pay for the celebrities and things. And it just wasn't, I don't know.
You know, I've found there's this voice. There's this voice even, you know, the treatment center I run where, you know, like insurance will pay for people to attend the full group, both groups for PHP. They need to attend the 6 hours. There's a group of people that, and I say, unless you attend all groups, you can't go because insurance doesn't cover it. And there's always like a very small percent that says, you just want our money. And I'm like, I just don't want to pay for your treatment. But in everything, right, there's always this voice. And it sounds like for whatever reason, that voice got loud of, why don't you do everyday people? And the reality was, because people don't want to see that. You know,
but we didn't know that, but we learned that. And I'm delighted to treat everybody. I have no affinity for treating celebrities. I
don't really like it.
Yeah, I never really did. I would done plenty of it. But here's the deal about treating celebrity. No different than everybody else. Must be treated exactly the same as everybody else. And getting them to fall in line with everybody else, a big pain in the ass and tough for them. And oftentimes, because they're drug addicts, they will look for easier, kinder, softer ways of doing it. And we'll find people that gratify their celebrityness. And it goes very, very poorly when you do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, listen, man, I really appreciate connecting with you and Susan behind the scenes. And would love to keep it going and connect more in the future. And
yeah. Well, look, the idea is I feel that you would agree with me that the goal is to do good, to use these medium to do good, to make a change, to bring awareness. And, you know, again, homelessness is the other big topic that, you know, I know probably you look out your window you're looking at right now.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe there's ways in that drives me crazy. And maybe there are ways into that as well.
Well, I'll tell you what I love. And I did it in entertainment for years. And everyone on the podcast has heard this so many times, so they're sick of me saying it. But I got sick of working with entertainers. Mm-hmm. And so I started going to Iraq to refugee camps alone in Kurdistan where and it was very difficult, very, very difficult. But I was like, this is what I'm going to do. But I love to reinvent. I love seeing people reinvent. And it's why I'm in this career and it's why I'm passionate about it is addiction and mental health is one of those things where within a day or two, you can see significant their affect changes, their light changes. And I just selfishly, that's what I love to see. So anything I can do to do that, I'm
yeah. I think I feel the same way. Again, like I said, when I didn't train for addiction medicine. There was no addiction medicine when I got going, but I was working at a psychiatric hospital as an internist, and I saw that what you're talking about, and I was like, well, I certainly can't do that in general medicine. What is that? I'd like to know what that was, and got very into it.
Well, Dr. Drew, thanks for coming on Always Evolving.
All right, man, appreciate it.
Thank you. If you want to keep getting Always Evolving podcasts, make sure to click to subscribe, rate, and review. Stay connected to me, Coach Mike Bear, on all social media platforms. And also Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific time, I have our empowerment group. They're free to join. And also you can just text me if you'd like to join the group. And that's 310-984-1858. And in the meantime, keep it magical. The Always Evolving with Coach Mike Bear podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended as a replacement or substitution for any professional, medical, financial, legal, or other advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This podcast does not constitute the practice of medicine or any other professional service. The use of any information provided during this podcast is at the listener's own risk. For medical or other advice appropriate to your specific situation, please consult a physician or other trained professionals.